It's time for the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. The views expressed at the Financial Cafe are those of the hosts and do not represent the views of Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, the SIU Board of Trustees, or WSIE Radio. Securities offered through Nickel Investors Corporation at No. 1 Executive Park, Granite City, Illinois, member FINRA and SIPC.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
I'd be rich.
And now, welcome to the Financial Cafe and our hosts, Larry Lexo and John Graney.
Good morning, John Graney.
Good morning, Larry Lexo.
Here we are again. Another fine, warm morning.
Warm. That's that's a gross understatement.
Have you fried any eggs on the sidewalk yet?
No, but I broke a really good sweat walking from the parking lot to the studio. I'm still trying to get the air conditioning here to cool me off.
Just imagine if you were a student out here traveling from the outer lots. I actually can more than imagine it. I did it for a number of years when I was out here.
I call Uber.
And it's good. Yeah, Uber from the outer lots.
Uber, come get me from the parking lot and take me to my building.
Uber outer.
You know, when we have days like this, I think back to, I mean, it's not unusual that in the summer in St. Louis that you have temperatures over 100 with 2,000% humidity.
Mm-hmm.
But like the pilgrims and that age where, you know, 1700, 1800s, where they wore an insane amount of clothing that was not the dry fit stuff that we have today. And your body was used to it, where we're used to air conditioning and being pampered. We're not as tough as we used to be, I guess.
You're saying we're spoiled.
Oh, absolutely. And I know, you know, I was in the Army. Our tents, we didn't have air conditioning and stuff like that. We were wearing fatigues and did just fine. But now that I'm not in the Army and my office is air conditioning, my car is air conditioning, my house is air conditioning, my clients' businesses are pretty much air conditioned.
Air conditioned?
I've just gotten soft.
Except when we go to one particular manufacturer in South St. Louis and we meet with the men out in the shop.
Yeah.
On, 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon, and it's about 100 degrees outside and about 120 inside. I remember those meetings.
Yes. Every now and then we get a little taste, I guess, to help us appreciate. Got to have the rain to appreciate the sun, right?
You got to have that. And I do also remember back in the day when I was growing up as a kid, we did not have air conditioning, and it wasn't an expectation. It wasn't a big deal. You know, they had these things, you know, with the little metal blades on it to go around, and it was a fan. So you turn the fan on, you open the windows, and that was that. We just adapted. Same thing on my first car. You know, we didn't have air conditioning in the car either. So
yeah, you did. 70 miles an hour with the windows down.
Windows open and the vents open and the air flowing through. That was air conditioning back then.
I remember that.
But we have come a long way, baby, I guess.
We didn't have air conditioning in our house until I was in high school. We started off with that attic fan.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Just sucked the hot air in the house.
Yeah, well, details. Keeps it moving anyway. You know, you feel cooler even if you're not.
I remember just laying on my back, hands and feet spread out, like, do not move. Just, you'll fall asleep eventually.
Eventually, and if you don't, then it's time to get up. So it doesn't matter. Thanks to the Chef Shop, we want to thank Vicki and Scott and Nancy and everybody. Vicki, of course, one of the original founders of the Chef Shop, but Scott and Nancy. And again, mentioned the Chef Shop is named an industry all-star. This came out a few weeks back from Gourmet Kitchen Magazine, or Gourmet Insider. So they are named one of the top organizations in the country due to their innovation, their expansion into the popcorn, the fudge markets, and the way that they treat their employees, their good deeds they do throughout the community throughout the year. So again, congratulations to the Chef Shop. In fact, this weekend they were going to have a big green egg demonstration, but I saw that
they're just going to use the parking lot.
Yeah.
I don't need to use the egg.
We don't need any charcoal. We'll just set it down in the parking lot. So that has been postponed for those of you who are going by today for the green egg demonstration. But maybe they'll pick a time this fall when it's a little bit cooler. But we do appreciate them underwriting the show and also Premier Fiduciary Services as one of our underwriters. So those of you who are in retirement plans, who have questions about your retirement plans, those certainly can be answered. Send them over to John Graney at jgraney@nickelfinancial.com. Also, check out our website, www.thefinancialcafe.us, for all of our shows are out there in downloadable format. So if you missed one or you have a specific topic, I was talking to someone the other day and they had questions about one or two different topics, things that we may have talked about in prior shows. So I pointed them in that direction and they were able to go out, download the shows and spent the whole time, spent an hour listening to the explanation in detail. And after that, if they had any other questions, I invited them to give us a call or send us an email and we certainly would get them the answers that they were looking for. So that's the start for today's show. John, what have we got?
Well, the In the Market segment, as you mentioned, brought to you by Premier Fiduciary Services. I came across three different topics. And the whenever I flip through, and the headlines have to kind of jump out and say, oh, that's something that I'm interested in reading. And then we come in, summarize, and talk it. The first one is Why Retiring in America Has Become Less Appealing. And
I can take that a couple of different ways. I'm not sure what they're referring to.
Yeah, I mean, this
there.
Actually doesn't look at personal reasons. This piece was written in a worldwide study. The U.S. fell to number 17, down three spots from last year in the Natixis Global Asset Management Global Retirement Index. The index ranks 43 mainly developed countries on their ability to offer its citizens a secure retirement. Norway, Switzerland, and Sweden topped the list. Why did the U.S. have such a dismal showing? The U.S. took hits in income equality, healthcare spending, and life expectancy. While America may have the fifth highest income per capita, we have the sixth lowest score for income equality, suggesting that retirement saving is difficult for average workers. Our life expectancy fell, yet we spend more on healthcare compared to the other countries analyzed in the index. Interesting. I do know, from prescription drugs that we pay a lot more for our prescription drugs than the rest of the world. And we, as Americans, for some reason, subsidize that. But then there's arguments because of class action lawsuits and all that, you know, we're bearing the brunt for that. But I was surprised that we're number 17.
17 out of 43 sounds, I guess you have to kind of look at it in regards to the approach, certainly the middle and upper income individuals in this country, I think, are much better prepared, as you and I have experienced working with clients in our 401k and retirement plans. But unfortunately, there are a lot of folks out there who are being subsidized through various federal and state programs who use that instead of getting a good job and working and putting money away for their future. And they figure that it's up to someone else, whoever someone else is, I never met them yet, to provide for their retirement. So they're just not saving, or they're not saving enough, certainly. So I could see it from that standpoint. And as far as sufficiency, unfortunately, in the U.S., healthcare, as we've talked about many times in this show, the average 65-year-old retirees are going to spend in excess of $250,000 on healthcare throughout their lifetime, with a better than 50-50 chance of living past age 90. And that's 65 to 90. It's a lot of years. If you don't plan for it, you don't have sufficient sources of income. And it leads us back down another road. I got a lot of tangents today, John. Another road, the state pension system, you know, being underfunded and sitting around 32% right now funded. At some point, the rubber's going to meet the road and those benefits are going to have to be cut. There is just no way. It is unsustainable in terms of that. And just in the same way that Social Security is unsustainable. As we go down the road, it was in somewhere in the 2030s, 35, 38, depending on who you want to ask, that Social Security will be cut. There's little or no surprise in that. The question is how it will be cut and what other sources are going to be used to help fund it. So from a retirement standpoint, you just can't rely on someone else, because someone else is not going to be there to provide for that retirement. So it's going to be up to you.
Interesting note here. It says 61% said that individual contributions should be mandatory to the plan. That just strikes me as odd, because, you know, there are plans that don't have very good participation, but you have 61% saying, oh, they should be mandatory. I don't know. Maybe we're our own worst enemies. In the last century, we've added 30 years to the average life expectancy. As you mentioned, declining company pensions. Individuals have been forced to take more responsibility for retirement savings and planning. We see a lot of times people hold off on saving because I'll worry about it then, and it's too late. You know, I do have a couple clients that require their participants to sit down with me and put a plan together. And it is amazing to see how many people get a lot more proactive with their retirement savings by doing that. And then there's clients that just, you know, they don't make it a mandatory to sit down and do a one-on-one meeting. And I think there are a lot of those people there that kind of fall into this category here, where they're just not going to be ready for retirement when it comes.
They're not going to be ready, and, you know, they're going to point the finger at everybody else, and that goes back to that old, you know, being responsible for yourself. You know, it's your future. You have choices in America, and then maybe that's a good bad news, because the good news is we do make choices every day about our future, and we don't have to put money away for retirement, but that means that down the road you're going to only receive the minimal benefits that may be available. So we do have some trustees who are very paternalistic, where they do require contributions to the retirement plans. They do not allow their participants to do loans or hardships, and they do not allow them to even take their money out immediately upon termination of employment, because they know that in many cases it's going to get spent on something that is not related to retirement. And the government has said more often than not that it is a retirement plan. The money put in should be there for retirement. And even with the teachers, you know, the teachers, whether they're under the State University Retirement System, the SURS, or the TRS, the Teachers Retirement System, or any of the others, they have mandatory contributions. You know, 8% of pay that the teacher receives under the SURS anyway goes into retirement, and the state puts in an additional 8%. So they're doing the 16%. Imagine that. What have we been talking about, John? You need to be putting away 12 to 15%, and that is mandatory. So the teachers have it right. Now, if they just get their act together on their pension and the state quit borrowing Peter to pay Paul, or Sally to pay Nancy, I'm not sure which, but leave the money alone, and if they're putting 16% away, there will be sufficient money there for them to retire on down the road. But unfortunately, when it's voluntary, a lot of people just say, I can't afford it, and I guess that's why we do what we do. It's part of our job to convince them that you need to be putting away money for retirement. It's no longer an option. It's no longer a choice. The only question is how much.
Here's another interesting story. Why are women quitting work so soon after turning 50?
That's a good question. Why are they, John?
Well, the primary one actually out of this list was elder care, caring for their parents. And that has, I guess, falling more to the women than to the men. Another reason was grandkid care. Their children are going to work and they need help with the grandkids because daycare and so forth is so expensive. Grandmom feels guilty or whatever, but stops working and goes back to taking care of the family. Technology getting away from them. And not getting lined up with personal goals. They didn't elaborate as to what those personal goals were, but they were the responses. And the danger of this is, as you talked about, we're living longer. And if you stop working at 50, that's another 15 years of savings that went by the wayside that you're really going to need. So what happens when you, and again, these are tough decisions. These are situations, I mean, maybe you can't afford the nursing home for your parent, and the only thing you can do is take care of them, and you don't have that work at home job or anything like that to work around these issues to help continue to save for your retirement.
Wow, this could turn into be a really long show, John, because, I mean, just talking about the fact, elder care, you know, the sandwich generation.
You know this.
I know from personal experience.
You just went through it all.
We cared for my mom and dad from the mid to late 90s. Yeah, it's been that long ago, and they both passed in 97, and we immediately rolled into caring for Diane's mom and dad. Her dad over a number of years, in the last five or six, her mom lived with us at our home to the point, you know, she had Alzheimer's to the point that we could no longer provide or leave her alone. And, you know, Diane and I needed to work. So, moved her into assisted living and independent, well, first independent, then assisted living, and then ultimately to a nursing home. So it's tough. And I see a lot of the maternalistic feeling, whether it's the female of the group, feels obligated to take care of the parent, or the male part of the organization just doesn't want to do it or can't. We don't know who the key wage earner is, but taking care of elderly parents has become a major issue, both financially for the caretakers as well as the people being cared for. And again, you know, is it the fact that the maternalistic instinct is that they want to take off work to take care of them, or they have to take off work to take care of them? And it can be either or both in some cases, but that gets them out of the workforce. And when they get out of the workforce, then again, as you mentioned, there's no contributions going in towards retirement anymore. And taking 15 years off the back end of saving for retirement can make a huge difference in terms of having the money, sufficient funds to last another 30, 40 years, especially if they're getting out at age 50. I mean, they may have 40 years ultimately that they're funding for retirement, for their own survival. So it's tough on the caretaker and the individual being taken care of, who in many cases really doesn't want to be a burden or doesn't want to be taken care of, but yeah, there's no choice. They can't do it on their own. So,
yeah. And then the last one I came across is the U.S. economy poised for faster growth. Leading indicator says yes. And this leading economic index, the U.S. LEI, rose sharply in June, pointing to continued growth in the U.S. economy and perhaps even moderate improvement in GDP growth in the second half of the year. The improvement in the index was spearheaded by strong housing permits after several months of weakness. Home builders plan to step up construction to meet rising demand as the economy enters its ninth year of expansion. Granted, very slow. Granted, probably a little tweaked here and there, a little bit of manipulation, but still ninth year of expansion. I thought that was a interesting headline there, because I don't know if I agree with that. We'll see.
We'll see.
I've been wrong with my bets lately, so I'm just going to keep my mouth shut, because
you know, by lunch
the fiduciary
anymore,
rule is, well, it seems to be here. There's still talk about getting rid of it, but don't know about that one either.
Well, I think at the very least, we will see some defanging of the fiduciary rule. It appears that the powers that be will take some of the fight off the table, the results of that. But in talking with a variety of industry folks that we work with, many of the companies have already adapted it. They've changed their procedures. They've changed their compensation schedules. They're not going to go back. It's just a fact of life. There may be a few that if it does get repealed, say, you know, we're going back to the old way. And the only justification for that would be to make more money. And that's not in the client's best interest, so that kind of defeats the whole purpose of the thing. So,
yeah, well, we've seen how hard it is to undo something that's already been put into effect, such as Obamacare.
That's an understatement.
It makes me nervous that his comment was, "We'll just let the thing blow up, and then basically we'll pick up the pieces." That's not a good alternative, because it's you and me that suffer with that scenario. So I just wish they would get their heads out of dark places and come up with a sensible plan, but that's probably too much to ask.
Nice way of putting it, John.
You like that?
I like that.
That was about as diplomatic as I can get.
That's about as diplomatic as you can get.
I didn't want you hitting the mute button and giving me that evil stare like, what are you saying?
Yeah, stop it. Just
so,
stop it.
So that covers the In the Market segment. And Larry and I had two different approaches for today's show. I had a topic that we're going to talk about. He had a topic that he was going to talk about. So we're both going to talk about our topics.
Topically speaking.
What's that?
Topically speaking.
And you're going to go first.
I am.
But
oh,
my my topic is life insurance on kids. I'm actually surprised that there are as many arguments for life insurance for children. Again, for you listeners that know me, I think I do a pretty good job of removing emotion from financial decisions. And we have talked about that before many times, that if you make a decision that's emotional,
never good.
It's never good. So that will be my topic. But Larry had some more pertinent stuff as we were driving on the nice and empty, beautiful campus here at SIE. It's going to be full again, and then we're going to have that long walk from the back parking lot because
I know they're going to take our parking space, John. Well, you know, the one solution to that is we could get here earlier.
That's not going to happen.
But, yeah,
we've tried that for a year now.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I was guilty today. I was very late.
He was slacking.
I was slacking. I was herding cats.
You know, he's herding cats and a year older, so we won't mention how many 50-year-olds that are out there. But
I feel it. I don't know why. It must be a mental thing, but I feel 50 this week.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, folks, I turned 50 this past Sunday. And ironically, I actually tweaked my back the morning of turning 50. Mm-hmm. And my eldest son said, Dad, you really are old, aren't you? Thank you, son. You're now grounded for a week. But Larry had a topic on applying for college, things that you need to do, because it is almost that time of year again with back to school.
It is that time of year again. And gosh, where do I start with this topic? And this kind of came to mind. A good friend of ours has asked me the question. Well, she asked me for help. I do serve on the foundation board here at Southern Illinois University in Edwardsville, and we serve the community and SIUE and support and whatnot. But it does give me an opportunity to know who the players are in the various departments, which sometimes half the battle is just knowing who to talk to about various things. So they had asked me to check in on a particular incoming student who had gone to SWIC, the Southwestern Illinois College, gotten some of the basics out of the way and was interested in starting at SIU, but seemed very perplexed about how to go about that process. So that's what kind of prompted this as a continuing topic. But I'm going to take a step back, John. We're going to go back about 3 or 4 or 5 years, because when you're thinking about college...
50.
He wasn't 50, so he likes that part. But when you're thinking about college, you need to start thinking early. I'm not talking, you know, out of the cradle or the crib, although if you're going to start a 529 plan, say, how about that segue? That would be a good time to do it, you know, as a new child is born, because then you have 18 years, give or take, to accumulate some money for college. But And college is not the wherewithal. It's not the solution in all cases. It could be vocational school. Trades are just as effective, just as profitable, depending on what you go into. But we're going to talk about college right now. So in today's environment, my opinion is you need to start thinking about that process, if possible, when you hit about a freshman in high school. Yes, I said high school, because there are a lot of things that have to happen in preparation for getting into college. And one of those things is, of course, as you start prepping, if you have an idea where you want to get into, there are a lot of general studies that have to be taken care of. And Southwestern Illinois College, Lewis and Clark College, our local community colleges, do a great job in association with Southern Illinois University here at Edwardsville and possibly other universities. I just am privy and aware of what's going on here, but they have coordinated a number of programs. So you can take a lot of classes at SWCC or Lewis and Clark that will then pass over and maintain your credit as fulfilling some of your general studies for college. So, and there are new programs starting all the time, both online and in person, that you can take college-level classes in high school. So start thinking about college, start thinking about what direction you want to head, and even what school you may want to go to, because taking the right classes at the right community college, which is the most cost-effective way of doing it, and getting kind of indoctrinated to, you're no longer in high school, kiddo, you know, you have to maintain, you have to monitor, you know, where do you have to be when, what has to be done, on what time frame, what type of studies have to be done. So there's a lot that goes into it. It's a good introduction to college is all I can say about that. But knowing what classes you're taking and the fact that they will transfer to your college of choice is a big step in the right direction. So once you've begun that process, you have to go through the ACT, the American College testing program, to create an ACT score, because most college and universities require a minimum ACT score, and that actually at SIU has been going up every year as to what it's going to take to get in, because they have more applications and they do have spaces for freshmen. So, you know, work on getting a good ACT. You can take the ACT multiple times. A lot of people don't realize that. There are courses out there, primers, tutoring that takes place. So try and get a good ACT score moving towards college. When you do finally, let's say you go to SWCC and you get some of the basics out of the way, you get ready to go into school, say here in the fall of 2017, start the process early. You know, start making sure, because a couple of things have to happen. It is an online process here at SIUE now. You go online and to the admissions office website, and you apply. So you have to go out, fill out the application information. They do require you to have a transcript sent of your, if you have less than 30 hours of college credit coming in, then you have to get a high school transcript sent to the college. It has to come from the high school, obviously, to prevent malicious changes and fraud and whatnot. So contact your high school. They can email it directly to admissions office at SIUE. You also have to have the ACT score. Not all transcripts include the ACT or the SAT, if you happen to take that one. So you get your ACT, SAT score and your high school transcript. Apply online and make sure, call them up. They're very good people. They want to help. Their whole job at admissions is to make sure that the information that's provided is accurate, is complete, and everything they need to make an admissions decision. Not everybody gets in, so, you know, get the information to them. If you do have classes that you had taken, say, for SWCC at, or Lewis and Clark, I had one student who had some classes they had gotten in at SLU, St. Louis University campus. Those transcripts also have to be transmitted directly to SIUE admissions. Once all of that information is there, and sometimes it takes two or three or four phone calls to make sure that that information gets there. But once that information is there, then admissions can make a decision. And I would encourage all of you who are new students, if you are in that process right now and you haven't heard back, then get on the phone to admissions and find out what the status of your application is, because that's what you're doing. You're applying for college. You're applying for access, for entry to the university, and there are certain standards that have to be met. There are certain requirements that have to be met. If you don't know what you don't know, as we often talk about, that can impede the fact that you may or may not get in time. The deadline for SIUE, the base deadline, is the 21st of July, so it's upon us now. If you have an active application in, just awaiting for some transcript, ACT, some other information, they may, I'm not guaranteeing it, but they may make an exception. And because you had applied early enough, they won't use the cutoff deadline because your application was already in, awaiting additional information. But they also will not take action on that application until all of the information has been received. So follow-up phone calls, emails to admissions, is all important to make sure they have everything they need. When they make a decision, you'll be notified, and if for whatever reason the decision isn't what you had hoped, then I would again contact them and address the issue. If there's something specific they were looking for, maybe they couldn't find it in your transcript or in your ACT or in other basic skills, you know, constitution and whatnot that you have to have, then maybe they overlooked it. Maybe it wasn't part of the packet that was sent. Maybe you didn't get it. It could be something that you could knock out, get out of the way real quick to get in, because enrollments have already begun as far as classes for the fall. And the longer you wait, the less choice you're going to have. Although a lot of freshman courses, freshman, sophomore, if you're transferring in from a junior college, you might even be at junior level by that point. A lot of them fill up fast. So make sure you get a good advisor, ask questions, talk to them about the process. There's a lot of help here on campus. The Student Success Center, which that's been here, I want to say 10 years now. There wasn't such a thing when I came to school, but we still had a lot of help with admissions and advisors to get a good advisor. But with the Student Success Center, that's the whole goal of that organization. And everybody who is employed participating there is to help you be successful in your college career. And the goal is to get out in 4 years or less. They don't want you here for 5 or 6 years, unlike some universities and colleges who want you on the long-term payment plan. The goal of SIUE is get you in, get you what you need, and get you out and on to a productive life, hopefully in a related area to your career. But the most important thing is if you are college material and that's what you want to do, is get that piece of paper, get that bachelor's of science or bachelor's of art, whatever, to fulfill the requirements of your need, because that's your entry card to a lot of positions that won't even consider talking to you if you don't have a bachelor's of some type. So if you have questions, you want to shoot me any of those, I'd be happy to help try and point you in the right direction if possible. You can send those to Lexow, that's LLEXOW, at nickelfinancial.com. It's NICOL financial.com, LXOnickelfinancial.com. I'd be happy to at least get you pointed in the right direction and help you get through the maze, because it is a maze sometimes here on campus. There's a lot of people, you know, 14,000 plus students and another 3,000 or 4,000 in terms of faculty and staff and support. So it can be somewhat daunting, but we're here every week. Our office, of course, is just located slightly off of campus, so within a couple of minutes of the campus. And we'll do whatever we can to help you through process. So that's kind of my take on the university, preparing, start early, follow up on what you're trying to do, and it's up to you. You know, don't expect somebody else to do it for you. It's up to you to make it happen.
That's true. I know, especially for like athletic scholarships, if your child is not, you know, in the elite, but still can get a D1 or even a D2 scholarship, it's really on the student and the parents to get that information out there. We have a family member who got a volleyball scholarship, and in speaking with her parents, they had to put together the videos. They had to get the information out. They had to get the current coach in contact with the university coach and kind of pull all this together for her to get her scholarship. It's a little different if they're in the top tier D1 schools, because then they have recruiters that will come and watch and see what you're doing and so forth. But if you want you want to get that, like you said, you have to go out and earn it, as Smith Barney used to say. And then, you know, I think back to when I applied for colleges. It was first semester of my senior year in high school. You know, got the SATs done, got the scores, started filling out applications, got my yays and nays, and made my decision before Christmas. But like you said, now there's so many grants, so many different ways that universities don't broadly announce that they will help, but to find out that you need at least a couple years to start pulling all this together, and like you said, take the courses. I grew up, it was the SAT. But I did not take the courses, and I kicked myself for that. But, you know, that's water underneath my bridge. But, you know, you had some good good advice in there, things to do.
And that brings up a good point. I failed to mention is here at SIUE, I am aware of a number of scholarships. There are more scholarships available than there are people to fill them. So if money is an inhibiting issue for you getting into college, going to the university, then start checking around. There are all kinds of scholarships in specific areas of interest. There are scholarships for children of people who have attended SIUE. There are scholarships for particular...
you want to adopt my kids?
Yeah, sure. there are scholarships in a wide variety of areas, scholastically, athletically, as well as just general scholarships. So there's a lot of money out there that is available that's awarded every year by the Alumni Association, by the foundation, by the university itself. You have the Chancellor Scholarships. So there is a lot of opportunity, a lot of money, and I hate to say it, but a lot of it goes unclaimed because students either are unaware or they just don't take the time and effort to make it happen. So the money's there. If you want to apply for it, that would be a great way of giving you a boost towards college.
I know, especially now. I mean, I look back at, I couldn't afford to go to Temple now where the tuition is. There's just no way. So, you know, if you want to help your kid not come out with, you know, $100,000+ of debt before they got their first job, you got to do a lot of work on the front end. So how are we doing on time, Mr. Alexa?
Oh, we have about 24 minutes left.
24 minutes. Okay, so are you done with your topic?
For the moment.
For the moment. All right, so my topic is an emotional one. And actually, one of my notes here talked about the company that probably does the most business is Gerber in this area as far as selling life insurance plans for your kids.
Mm-hmm.
What's your opinion on that?
My opinion has always been that it has to be for the right reason. And there are just a couple of reasons. Two that are most apparent, most predominant. One is to provide the ability to get insurance later on in life after age 21 or 25 when the individual is diagnosed with juvenile onset diabetes, is diagnosed is diagnosed with any type of familial type of illness that would render them otherwise uninsurable. Policies today and the ones I have written in the past and continue to offer is you might do a $25,000 face value initially, and then that would provide, depending on the policy, anywhere from 7 to 8 times that in total coverage, even if the individual is totally uninsurable as an adult. So I think that is important because we don't know when someone's born what they're going to be diagnosed with, and all it takes is a bad diagnosis or information in the chart or the Medical Information Bureau, and all of a sudden every company out there is going to turn them down. But if you have that guarantee of future insurability, then that's not an issue at all. The other situation is for those who really can't afford funeral expenses. You know, not a lot of kids pass away before, you know, age 18 or 20, but there are some. And for families who it would be a drastic hardship to spend, you know, $8,000, $10,000, $12,000 or more for a funeral, then many of the policies, the smaller $10,000, $15,000 policies, do address that. As far as an investment, no, I'm not on that bandwagon. But those are the only two cases that I think it is important to protect insurability and just to provide for the unexpected, that if something does happen, that it's not going to create a hardship for the rest of the family.
They are the two primary reasons that I have presented when parents have asked me this question, and I haven't found any really new ones in the readings that I did in prep for today's show. The one article here by Chuck Jaffe, Grow Up Insurance for Kids Makes Little Sense. He does point out that they are the two topics, issues, if you will, that that it makes sense to have this. But he does talk about buying term as opposed to a cash value life, policy, yeah. Whereas you're buying $25,000 coverage for 1 year would cost less than 50 cents a day, which sounds pretty good, until the parent recognizes that the $175 per year would pay for $100,000 of term life insurance.
It's true.
That would protect the family until the child reaches age 21. I am actually an example, and unfortunately, my examples seem to be for the wrong reasons. Excuse me. That I got diagnosed with type 1 diabetes when I was 33. I was not married. I did not have children, so I did not have any, quote, insurable interests at the time. However, I was engaged, and it is very difficult for me to get life insurance now. I do have two policies that are term, but I'm paying out the wallet, if you will, for, I was going to say wazoo, but for that coverage. You know, when I went through the whole process, I am rated higher than a smoker, just being a type 1 diabetic. So that makes a good example. However, as with any insurance, you're protecting against something that you have no idea whether it will occur or not. And it is a pretty small chance that that actually happens. I happen to be, you know, the lottery winner in that direction. But at the end of the day, if you're healthy, your family's healthy, the likelihood of that happening for your children is pretty remote. Also, it talks about here, the policy stays in place for as long as premiums are paid. The coverage amount doubles automatically, effectively cutting the premium per 1,000 in protection half. So as long as the premiums are paid, the policy cannot be canceled. This is an attraction, but Gerber does not provide any information on studies on the parents or grandparents that actually keep the policy in place after the child reaches adulthood. So then it's just all that money's gone. Or the child doesn't continue it. As a general... here we go. Nope, I read that one. Comes insurable. Manager total care plan guarantees coverage, but that protection is severely limited. So here, about the only way the Gerber plan is likely to be a real benefit is the child house somehow becomes uninsurable, as you were talking about. Guarantees coverage, but it's limited because the additional coverage beyond the small minimum comes at standard rates, which would be more expensive. That's likely to be pricey. Typically price bulk coverage, as if customers have one foot in the grave. Ultimately, the protection tends to follow the curve of the parents, who are typically overprotective when they first have children.
Then they get over it.
Yep. It's amazing how, it's, you know, with four kids, you know, the first one, you're just like, oh my gosh, you know, got a bump, got to go to the hospital. Fourth one, nah, you're not going to die. We're good. Yeah. You know, it's just how your perspective changes with experience. I, even with my condition, even with, you know, reading all this information and doing this for years, I still don't see it. If your financial situation is one that you can't afford a funeral, you know, $10,000 or whatever, you know, maybe it's buy a small term, for that, which will cost you pennies. I don't see the need for a cash value type policy, any type of permanent insurance. You know, and once the kids are adults and everything, it's their responsibility to run their lives, not you as parents. It's harsh, but that's just the way it should be.
Fact of the matter.
So,
fact of the matter. Yeah, and that expands. You know, life insurance is something that, and they really, it's named that because it's a much friendlier name. It's really death insurance. You're predicting or you're betting on when an individual will leave this world and move on to the next one, and nobody knows that. So life insurance is something that is important for survivors, is important for the individuals left with the family, and in the case of a juvenile, other than paying for the funeral and potentially protecting insurability. I think those are really the only two cases that you can make a strong case for any type of life insurance. And for the individual that becomes uninsurable, the fact that they can have 7-8 times greater coverage than they would not be able to get any coverage is a big deal. So it just depends. And once you fulfilled, it goes back to the financial plan. You know, have a specific written plan with specific time frames and objectives, implementation and monitoring of the plan. And if insurance fits into that and you have the income available to do that, then it's something you can look at. But otherwise, I think, we've come to the conclusion it's not an investment, and it just depends on whether or not having that coverage, having that particular outcome covered is what you want to do.
Yeah, I mean, the whole purpose of life insurance is to protect against future income that your beneficiaries, your insurable interest would need. And they use the example here, unless your kid is a star on the Disney Channel, there's really no income. My son has done some mowing of grass and things like that, but I wouldn't consider that a sustainable income that we need.
Probably
to protect.
Not protecting that income. Yeah, yeah, yeah. If they're a child prodigy and generating a child star, generating that kind of income, then yeah, you may want to, but otherwise.
And it'll come, as we have talked about so many times, it comes back to putting the financial plan together. You know, how do you consider, prepare, plan for unforeseeable events is you put it into your plan. You let the model run its analysis. You look at the results of the analysis and say, okay, we don't have it right now. So, yes, we need this insurance product. Then you go out and you find the insurance product that's best satisfies that need at the lowest cost. You know, probably the biggest thing is looking at, you know, the company that's offering the insurance product to make sure that it's a strong company, has good credit ratings, and go from there.
And that really is the case. You know, we've talked about on other shows, how do you choose the right insurance company? Well, number one is their stability. You know, what is their rating? Their AM Best, their Moody's, their Standard & Poor's, you know, and they need to be in the AA+ rating category. And that accounts for their claims paying ability, for their management of their assets and so forth. So you get a good quality company. The next thing that you may look at is service and support. Have they been around? You know, there's a lot of great insurance companies out there that have been around approaching 150 years, give or take. That's a pretty good record when you look at all the things that have happened since the mid to late 1800s. And they continue on and continue to be profitable. And then, you know, take a look at the different types of policies and price. You know, it used to be there were one or two types of policies, but now there are tons of options. There's return of premium policies. There's the whole life policies. There's universal life. There's variable life. There's
rider upon rider upon rider that goes on these policies.
Yeah, you can. And a lot of times you actually can. It brings up a good point. You can actually cover children as a very economical addition to a parent's policy. So you can get a child's rider, for example, for almost nothing on a parent's policy, and it addresses the funeral expense issue. So, you know, look at the company, the ratings, look at the cost, service, support, and somebody that's been around for a while, and you're not going to go wrong on that basis. But, you know, don't let anyone talk you into anything. Make sure it fits in your financial plan, that it's suitable for what you're trying to do. And, you know, just make that a part of the puzzle. As we talk about insurance, we always have to bring up long-term care insurance, a topic near and dear to my heart and one that is ever-changing. You know, the traditional long-term care policy of 15 years ago, 20 years ago, is no longer available. It's gone. You know,
the underwriters and actuaries got smart on that.
They got smart. They saw the experience rating. Two things happened. People lived longer than they anticipated, and people did not drop the policies as quickly or as often as they anticipated. So their lapse ratio was way off base.
Went through the roof.
And, you know, there were several companies out there that were selling products left and right very inexpensively, and then started raising rates, and then actually ended up filing bankruptcy because they couldn't cover all the claims that they had. So, again, strength of the company, somebody that's been around, they've been in the industry a long time, top rated, good financial stability, and then look at the policy, because there are a lot of varieties of just traditional long-term care policies. There are annuities with long-term care provisions. There's life insurance with long-term care provisions. So there are a lot of options out there that, and then there's always self-insurance. You know, that's part of the financial plan. Are you in a position to be able to self-insure against spending, you know, $60,000, $70,000 a year for 3, 4, 5 years in the event one or the other ends up in a facility for that period of time? It gets really expensive really fast, and that can throw a huge dent, if not a catastrophic event, in a well-thought-out plan that wasn't anticipating that kind of expense for that duration anyway. So, yeah,
and I met with some people yesterday, and we talked about the importance of the plan, and I said, you know what, we need to make sure we update this each and every year. You know, they had a death in the family, so now there's some inheritance that is involved, and that changes the plan. That changes the dynamics. The original plan that we did, we had a retirement age. They said, hey, can we look at this if we were to retire earlier? We want to retire earlier. So, I mean, that's what you use this tool for. Your college education expenses, once you get through the process that Larry talked about as far as getting the scholarships and grants and whatever's left over for your expense, okay, let's put that into the plan. Because 10 years prior, you'd maybe not have any idea what it was going to cost you. But now that you're 2, 3, 4 years out, okay, how does this impact my retirement analysis? And that's the whole purpose of the plan, is to lay it in place. As we talked about last week, I told someone, you know, the likelihood, because they were young, that this actually turns out the way it is laid out is pretty remote. And they said, well, why am I doing it? Well, it's a whole lot easier to tweak a plan than it is to create one from scratch. So if you have some scenarios that pop up that you weren't expecting, you put that into the plan, you let the model run out its various probability calculations. It's not the end all be all, but at least it gives you some peace of mind that, okay, we have a reasonable plan in place. Let's move forward with that plan. Or we have some adjustments, it's still reasonable, let's make those adjustments and let's move forward and keep going. For the people, I don't know how people don't do this or take advantage of it.
Well, it goes back to talking about, if you just have a plan, you have a 90% or better chance of success just by having a plan. That doesn't mean it is the final plan.
Let's make it a reasonable plan.
We probably should put
that caveat in, because right, if I have a plan that has me retiring on my private island somewhere in the you know, beautiful equatorial region, that's not reasonable.
That's not going to work. We'll go back to the Monte Carlo simulations, probability of success. If you have a plan that has reasonable probability of success, you have over 90% chance of getting to your goal.
Okay, I like that statement a lot better.
We'll caveat that.
I think the attorneys will like that one better.
Yeah, the aforementioned was strictly opinion of no one but us.
You.
But yeah, exactly. But and it brings up a good point. A lot of people, hate to keep using it. I guess somebody I'm sure has patented the fact that the phrase "you don't know what you don't know," but in the event of many individuals who are, as going back to the beginning of the show, caring for elders in that sandwich generation, you really need to become aware, if at all possible, of the parent's financial situation, where things are located, what all of the policies are, what companies they're with. It is amazing the amount of money that is, and the term is escheat, escheated to the state of Missouri, Illinois, whatever state you happen to be in, of monies, life insurance, death benefits, annuity settlements, passbook savings account, checking accounts that were abandoned or did not have a beneficiary labeled or anyone that they could contact. So they were basically, after a period of years of trying to contact them, and many of the insurers are going through this right now, they're being required by the government to the state governments in many cases, because they oversee the insurers, to attempt to contact the death benefits claimants, the beneficiaries, on policies that have not been paid out and have just been held there because nobody claimed them. So that money goes to the state. It sits there until somebody claims it. And there are hundreds, literally hundreds of millions of dollars in the state. If you go to the Secretary of State's office of any of the states, Missouri, Illinois, they all have them. They have a department that is responsible for monitoring, controlling, and tracking these assets. You can go Google it. You can look it up. You can find out if you do have monies out there and claim it. Because otherwise, who knows? And taking me, getting back on my original thought is people don't know what they don't know about annuities in particular, as well as life insurance policies, because annuities are a strange bird, unlike stock and bond accounts, where if you are properly listed as a beneficiary on those accounts, you do get a stepped up basis, which can be huge. It can be huge. So, a stock that, a parent bought back in the who knows, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, whatever, you know, maybe it's got a cost basis of, $30 a share, and now it's worth $100 a share. It's the difference in getting a stepped up basis to $100 a share on date of death, or $30 a share, and now you're paying tax on the difference when you sell it on the other 70. Annuities don't work like that. You don't get a stepped up basis. However, you have to look at who is listed as beneficiary, how the policy is written. There are some annuities that the beneficiary can continue as their own policy without having to cash them in and pay tax. I thought of that after our conversation yesterday, John, but there are some annuities that you can transfer to the beneficiary. They will be rewritten and just continue on without the taxation. But otherwise, when an annuity is cashed in, you do pay tax on the growth. So if you're not planning on that, that can be a huge hit. If you have a $100,000 annuity and half of its growth, and all of a sudden you have $50,000 of income you weren't counting on.
And it's taxed at your ordinary income, right?
Taxed at your top level of ordinary income. I mean, that's huge. So, you have to know those things as much as you can about your parents, their financial situation, where things are, make sure they have a current will, trust, powers of attorney, healthcare directives, all that good stuff. We've talked about it on other shows, but it bears repeating for someone who may not have been listening. Those are all important things. And if you have other questions specific to that or exactly what's involved in either an estate plan or a financial plan, be sure and contact us either LLexo@nickelfinancial.com or JGraney@nickelfinancial.com. You can check out our other shows at www.thefinancialcafe.us and listen to all of our shows about specific topics such as how do you choose a financial planner, estate planning, life insurance, trusts, business entities, buying and selling businesses, acquisitions. I think in the last year we've been on the air, we've covered a lot of major topics. And hopefully our listeners have found some benefit and learned a little bit about it and found out some things that they didn't know they didn't know.
And some reviews on some really good coffees from the chef shop.
Exactly. So thanks again to you, Scott and Nancy. We started off the show. We actually did sample every coffee that they have on the shelf and gave our opinion. And we also have moved on to a certain extent. We didn't bring our popcorn today, John. We got to do that next time.
I know. And I got to have to go back by there because I am now out of the Highlander Grog.
Oh, no. John is out of Highlander Grog. Scott, you hear that? You better give him some Highlander Grog. He'll be in, if not later today, tomorrow. Check that out. But thanks to them for underwriting us, supporting us, helping us. Congratulations again for being an all-star. We knew they were, but they were recognized by the Gourmet Insider as a national winner of the all-star competition. So, it just shows how wonderful they are, and the show, the store that they've developed, and the different things that they've been able to do over that period of time. We do thank Steve Jankowski, the general manager here at WSIE, for his help and support putting up with us and the family.
Watching my kids as we're in here today.
Yeah. So Steve was recruited today, and John was trying to say he'd come back about in about 6 hours, but he didn't go for it.
Yeah. Steve caught me before I got to the door.
Yeah, exactly. So
Well, we had for July, we have our children's financial planning. So last week we covered 529s. This week we covered buying insurance for kids. And next week we will go through the stages of your child's life and different ways that you can help them be financially prepared when they come out at age 18, 21, whenever they leave the nest.
I can't wait, John. Thanks for listening. You're listening to The Financial Cafe on WSIE 88.7 FM on the beautiful campus of Southern Illinois University, Edwardsville. Have a great week, everybody. Say bye, John.
Bye, John.
You've been listening to The Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop in Edwardsville, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. Listeners are invited to send your questions regarding retirement, investments, or any other financial topic that may pique your interest. Send the questions to John at jgraney@nickelfinancial.com or to Larry at lexo@nickelfinancial.com. John and Larry will discuss those questions each week during their Q&A session. If you prefer, they will respond to you in private. Thanks for listening to The Financial Cafe on 88.7 WSIE The Sound.